Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. And it's Monday the 27th of February. I think I said the wrong date coming in into the show because I'm a day off because I'm still on vacation.
You had a good one, didn't you?
Yeah, it was very nice. Very nice. Let me introduce everybody, get started here, and we'll get to the business at hand. A lot going on. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you? Well, you're not here.
Good morning.
You're with us.
Very good. I am, and thank you so much, Joe, for coming back. I wouldn't blame you if you stayed where you were.
Well, it was. Hold on there, Alan. I'm trying to get Rosemary so she can hear you. There we go. Well, thank you. It's good to be back, and missed you all, and it's nice. And thank you for to Ray Graff for minding the store and keeping the ship afloat and all that good stuff. How are you feeling, my friend?
Don't ask. I'll just sit here in the dark and,
okay.
And
all
hurt.
Right. All right. Alan broke the ankle, so we're... He's under strict orders to keep it elevated, so that's exactly what he's doing. We also have the director of the journalism program at UAlbany, Rosemary Armeo, with us. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Very nice to see you. And Libby Post is with us. My God, when's the last time you were here?
Before the fund drive.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So political consultant Libby Post is with us. So we welcome Libby. Good morning.
Good morning,
dear. Very
nice
to have you here. All right. So let's get to what's going on. You know, I have to say, as I was putting the stories together, I was like, I wonder what I'm going to lead with tomorrow. And now I just can't help it. Let's talk about the Oscars.
Okay. Oh, right. The best Oscars ever.
Like, what happened? I'm an Oscar-holic. I love these things. I love watching them. I love watching the movies. And I just, like, I think probably most people who are watching just assumed that La La Land was going to win. Mm-hmm. It was not my favorite film, but okay, fine. And then Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, Bonnie and Clyde.
For the 50th anniversary of Bonnie and Clyde,
yes.
Strolled down the Great White Way.
And stole the show.
With the wrong envelope.
That's right. And as Bill Maher said, well, they are robbers.
Yeah.
So Warren Beatty started to read it and realized that it wasn't right, gave it to Faye Dunaway to look at, and then she just said, La La Land, because she saw that name of that movie.
Right.
Well, that was not the movie that had won. They gave him the wrong envelope. PricewaterhouseCooper screwed up. And
the loser of the night.
Yeah. The loser of the night is the accounting firm who's been doing it since I
forever.
Think the beginning of the Oscars.
May not next year.
And then it turns out that there's some very long, convoluted reason that they have two envelopes, because what they did is they gave them the envelope for
Emma Stone,
Best Actress, as opposed to Best Picture. And of course, the Best Picture turned out to be Moonlight. And it was just a great live cluster on the Oscars.
They kept saying, "This is not a joke. This is
not a joke."
And we're laughing. Oh my goodness!
But it was one of the best Oscars, and I watch it every year. It was one of the best Oscars ever. Jimmy Kimmel will be back. He was brilliant.
He says, "No, I broke the Oscar. You know, I didn't get something. Maybe you can explain it." He goes, "I'm going to blame this on Steve Harvey. Is that some reference?"
Oh, Steve Harvey.
I know who he is, but
he named the wrong Miss America or Miss Universe.
Right, that's right.
One
the
of those.
Beauty contest.
Right, the beauty contest.
Wasn't that a Trump contest?
Yes, of course it was.
Yes,
they're all Trump contests.
The Russians hacked the Academy
you
Awards.
You think that might
yeah,
be?
Yeah, that's it.
Right, right. But it's interesting that the president was very quiet.
Alan, mm-hmm. I'm guessing that you did not stay up till midnight to watch.
You have guessed right. I watched all the clips. I got up at 12:30. I think the thing was still going. Roselle came up and told me what happened. So she was very taken with what you guys are talking about, the mess up. Mm-hmm. And I always feel comforted when there's a mess up because I know other people can do it besides us.
Yeah, I mean, it's very funny because you just, it's, I mean, sure that no one else sees this as funny at the Academy. However, you know, it's the one thing you do, right? And mm-hmm. it's also your biggest award. It wasn't like cinematography got screwed up. No, it was best picture.
Except that it now puts Moonlight in a spotlight that it well deserves.
Well,
it's
I felt bad for
movie.
The La La Land people, and they won like six other
they
awards.
Were
but there they up, they're up there saying, oh,
but they
great.
Were,
by the way,
incredibly gracious.
Yeah,
both sides were very gracious.
Yes.
Both sides.
What could
they
you
were,
do?
They yeah. were. They were very good winners and losers on both sides.
Right.
At both times.
Right.
Yeah.
But up to that point, it had been a very smoothly run
production very well
with
done.
Great moments when they brought out Katherine Johnson, who's 98 years old, the real woman of the three in Hidden Figures. That was so moving.
The tour bus?
Hysterical.
When they brought in a bunch of people who were on a typical Hollywood tour, they thought they were coming to a wax museum or something. They walk in, and there's
the
Oscars.
It
was a riot. It was just one of the funniest moments.
My favorite was when they asked the woman. She's got, you know, like an old sloppy coat on, her hair is up, and she's taking pictures, and they go, who's your favorite actor? And she's kind of dazzled, and she goes, there he is, right there, and it's Denzel.
Denzel.
Wow.
All
right. It was a good moment, like real people, and it was very fun.
Yeah.
Yes, and it was real politics, too, last night. I mean, you know, we cannot deny how political this Oscars was.
Definitely.
The guy who didn't come, he won for The Salesman, he didn't come specifically.
The Iranian director.
Right, one of his compatriots was not allowed to come in, who did the White Helmet short.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there's some real consequences now. Politics was great.
One award went to an Italian winner who donated, or dedicated rather, his statue to the immigrants.
Right.
Another one was dedicated to the gender.
Right. All the
different gender people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It was definitely
it
political.
It was great. It was really, really great.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about other news, and we'll talk about what's happening in the world of Washington. Oh, I missed talking about this for a week. We'll be back and address all of that right after this.
Support comes from Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, providing comprehensive, minimally invasive dentistry for children and adults, accepting new patients, PadulaDDS.com. New England Hydroponics, the indoor gardening experts, offering a full selection of hydroponics, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment, Southampton and Framingham, Massachusetts, online at nehydro.com. Alarms of Berkshire County, offering full-service residential and commercial security and life safety monitored systems based on individual or corporate needs for nearly 35 years. alarmsofberkshirecounty.com. The Vascular Group, specializing in vascular health with 10 locations in upstate New York, bringing internationally recognized care to your hometown, albanyvascular.com. And from the Pioneer Valley Chinese Immersion Charter School, enrolling kindergarten 6th and 9th grades. Information sessions Saturday at 1 p.m., pvcics.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. So let us talk politics and what happened over the weekend. Former Labor Secretary Thomas Perez was elected chairman of the Democratic National Committee on Saturday, narrowly defeating Representative Keith Ellison of Minnesota to take the helm of a still divided party, stunned by President Trump's victory, but hopeful that it can ride the backlash against the presidency to revival. The balloting, which carried a measure of suspense not seen in the party in decades, revealed that Democrats have yet to heal the wounds from last year's presidential primary campaign. Mr. Perez was buoyed by activists most loyal to former President Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, won with 235 votes out of 435 cast on the second ballot. And of course, Mr. Ellison was a favorite and an enthusiast of Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, and he got the remaining 200 votes. So, Alan, what do you make of Thomas Perez, former Labor Secretary, now helming the Democratic National Committee?
I was struck when you guys were talking about the way in which it all sort of came together after the great mistake at the Oscars. There are times when you have to come together, and I think that's what happened. These guys were very good with each other. And I think Ellison's statement that, you know, this is something we don't have the luxury. We don't have the luxury of having a disagreement right now. And boy, was he right about that. In the back of my mind, the elephant of the room, of course, is the fact that Ellison is a Muslim, and it would have been a great victory for the forces of good in the United States to have somebody of who is Muslim, and on the other hand, and it would have shown the American people, because that's what we're fighting for, many of us, to show that we can have a progressive government and not turn back to the old ways. Except I gotta tell you, I think that Donald Trump is probably the unhappiest man in the world that he can't do his mischief this morning by saying, you know, and here they are led by a Muslim, because he would have done it for sure.
I absolutely agree with you, Alan. It would have been lovely, but I do think it would have been a setup for the Republicans and for Trump, and it would have continued the divide. I'm hopeful now that folks will be able to reach out to those who were disaffected Democrats and bring them back into the fold with messages that are more inclusive and understanding of why they voted against the party. But now they're starting to realize that they really need to vote for the party. But it would have been great, but I think Trump would have used it as, you know, but Tom Perez, he's Hispanic. He'll call him a rapist and a murderer because he's Hispanic. So,
yeah, I find that I am irritated at the risk of setting off many WMC listeners with Bernie Sanders, who did not get the message about we can't afford to leave here in dispute. He sent out a message that was extremely negative and has set off lots of talk. The African women's group of the party is also saying, no, we don't want this establishment person. Perez is not exactly a mainstream American in the Trump mold either. He's extremely hardworking. He's made all the right moves. And to say he's just Debbie Wasserman Smith warmed over, Schultz warmed over, I don't get that. I don't get what the problem is with an establishment. Maybe there's more establishment people in this party than the progressives want to admit, but I don't think Bernie did any good. And in fact, he gave fodder to Trump, who began talking about how the party is still rigged against Bernie. He couldn't win, and now his surrogate could not win either. Bad.
Yeah, and Chuck Schumer had backed Ellison, right? So the coming together at the end, though, of him being named deputy chairman and the wine that they keep, that they seem to be playing very, very nice, at least in these earlier
They're
days.
They're genuinely friends, yes. The two of them, Perez
so,
and Ellison.
I mean, that seemed like it will make a difference, don't you think?
Yes, I also think they understand what's at stake. And internal squabbles right now are not what we need. We need strong leadership. We need people to rally around the Democratic flag, and we need to fight. I do think that it is possible for us to make great inroads in 2018. I also think it's possible for us to make great inroads this fall. We saw a state Senate district flip in Delaware. It's about grassroots activism. Tom Perez was very clear. He wants to focus on down ballot races as well as the top of the ticket. And that's what we need.
Mm-hmm. Alan, don't you think? I mean, the Democratic Party does have a penchant for being fractured and screwing things up like this.
They certainly do, Joe. But every once in a while, you know, it's the old story about the mule. How'd you get your attention? I hit it with a 2x4. It's a bad joke, and all you animal lovers don't get on me for
don't
it. But it's an old joke.
Right.
But however, I have to say that is exactly what has happened here. Everybody's lifting up their heads in the Democratic Party, and they're saying, "How did this happen? I can't go anywhere without somebody saying, 'How did this happen? I don't get it.'" Well, a lot of people stayed home. You know, you had a 5% more turnout from people who didn't vote on the Democratic side. I'll tell you right now, Hillary would have been the president right now. And I think there's a lot of voters' remorse or non-voters' remorse that's going on. But they also know that if they keep hitting at each other now, I think Rosemary has a point, a good point, and that is there are people who will not forget that there was dissonance in the Democratic Party running up to the election. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, or Smith, whatever name she's using now, was of course symbolic of this, as, by the way, was Donna Brazile.
Yes, who
was accused of having done this kind of thing. However, that's done now.
Right.
And if that kind of stuff keeps up, they'll never win another election again.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. We have to move on as a party, and mm-hmm. people need to coalesce. And there's bigger fish to fry.
So in the minute that we have before a break, are you confident, and whoever wants to take a stab at this, are you confident that Tom Perez has that leadership that will help right the ship?
We'll see. I'm
no.
hopeful.
Alan says no.
No, I saw his talk. I thought it was okay, but I didn't think it was brilliant. And boy, I'll tell you, he had better just rise to the occasion, or it'll all be for naught.
All right, let's pause there. We will take a quick break. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we will get to those. Plus, we'll talk about other issues happening over the weekend that we need to address. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post make up the panel this morning, and we welcome your letters as well. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post on the show this morning, and we thank you very much for joining us. We have some letters here. We'll get to those, and we'll move on to some other topics. Jamie says, waking this morning, I feel bad for Warren Beatty. He had the right instinct, knew something was wrong, then let doubt get the better of him. I think he probably feels bad today. Didn't trust himself, let Faye Dunaway take a quick look, and she made the mistake.
That feeling, blame the woman.
Yeah, that's just like Adam
it
and
really
Eve,
is.
Isn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
She ate the apple.
Well, okay.
Okay, yeah, let's just move
okay,
on.
Okay, Adam, what do you think? You want to put in a word for
I think he was looking, I'm not beating up anybody. I'm saying he was looking at her saying, what should I do? She just saw the name of the movie and read it and thought he was being polite, and it was just miscommunication. I don't think it was any more than that. But, you know, and it would seem to me, we were having this discussion during the break, it would just seem to me that somebody would look in the briefcase and say, oh, we have two extra envelopes here. I wonder what
happened.
Well,
there is that, the people on backstage.
Anyway, the letter goes on and says, that feeling where you think, yeah, that person or entity with authority must know better, I should go along with it. Come to think of it, let's not let this happen, America. Not even a little. Hey, Congress, that means you.
Good letter. Funny.
All right.
Funny.
Joe.
Yes.
During the BBC break, I was listening to the BBC News, and you know what they led with.
Oh, yeah,
they led
sure.
with the miscommunication at the Oscars. And here we have the President of the United States telling certain, through his emissary, of course, the certain people that they can't come in the room during the so-called gaggle, which is extraordinary. I mean, freedom of speech versus and freedom of the press versus what happened at the Oscars. Now, I know that you all think that the Oscars were important, but leading with it, a little bit much.
We all stayed up to watch it.
No, I think he's talking about the BBC.
The BBC was locked out. They're one of the groups that were locked out of.
Oh, so they led with the Oscars?
Yeah.
Well, so did every other news outlet.
I think I would have led with it, and I'm a big news junkie.
I mean, for 12 hours, it's going to be a story,
and then it'll be over.
Phase.
And...
But we'll get to the other stuff there, too. I was disappointed that Mayor Pete Buttigieg of South Bend did not win. I agree with Howard Dean that the future of the Democratic Party rests with the younger generation. This is from Peter, who did not vote in the numbers they should. Do not vote in off-year elections and do not vote down ballot. If we can harness their voting power, we can win for generations, but the mayor has a very bright future ahead of him. Michael says, I think we need to stop expressing outrage and anger over Donald Trump's daily insults to democracy. It's not surprising anymore. Hillary, in a message over the weekend, encouraged resistance and action in the form of demonstrations and letting our representatives know our views. This will be more effective in bringing our country back to one in which we could be proud again.
Okay, well, I'm going to ignore that. I plan to express dismay and horror at his outrages every day, and also to demonstrate and go to meetings, which I did this weekend. But no, we must keep the focus on how out of the ordinary and how extreme he is.
Lauren says, how does it feel to be labeled as the enemy of the people? It is a reprehensible way to treat journalists and reminiscent of the Chinese Cultural Revolution, which pit neighbors against neighbors. Really bad news. Enemy of the people and what Alan was just referring to, the gaggle that took place on Friday, in which major news organizations, BBC, CNN, NBC, The New York Times, Washington Post, were all cast aside and not allowed. Kudos to the AP for being invited and saying, we're not going.
And the Wall Street Journal came out and said, we didn't realize what was going on. It was a mess. Had we known, we would not have been there either. So that's important as well.
It's a Murdoch paper.
Alan?
And even NPR. Michael Reskis, a great news director at NPR, one of the best facets of NPR, really let them have it, as I knew he would and should. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think there's a certain coalescence here. The question, Rosemary, for you, I think, is should people stay out en masse, or does the news have to get covered one way or another?
The news does get covered, Alan. You know, I've been espousing this for a while. I think those gaggles are nothing more now than a spectacle and a public relations vehicle for the Trump administration. I would not let my, if I were the czarina of the world, I would not have real news writers in there. I'd have them out actually covering stuff, getting the leaks that are driving Trump insane and are incredibly accurate and disruptive and good. That's what they're trying to do. So, I wouldn't be in there. I also would not have gone to the White House correspondence. I'm annoyed that Trump got to say, I'm not going to go before they canceled it.
That annoyed me, too.
Yep.
That annoyed me, too. Because that's
Trump,
an event in April.
Do you
April.
Not know this, Libby? Trump
I
said
know that he's not going. I didn't know they canceled the date.
No,
they didn't cancel.
I'm saying I had said they should cancel it.
Oh.
There should not be a gridiron dinner this year.
The correspondence.
Because he's not coming?
No.
Oh, just in general.
In protest.
Because he's not the friend of the media.
No,
why would
not.
We go there and joke with him and toast him? Ridiculous.
Okay. So meanwhile, when it comes to the leaks, we find out this weekend, ironically / amusingly, that Sean Spicer demanded his staff to hand over their personal and government issue cell phones to find out if they were responsible for some of the leaks that were coming out of private meetings. He then, after looking at everybody's phone, said, you better not leak any of this. And then within 4 minutes, it was out on the internet.
It's amazing. Isn't it, though? It's just astounding.
I think the
best
tweet was probably
ever.
Done. Right. Yeah. You know, it was probably done in the doorway. I mean, it's comical. I heard a great line over the weekend, which, and I do not know who to attribute it to, but they said that if you don't want leaks in Washington, move. You know, it's just stupid.
But to those people who are thinking that we're just chortling in triumphant glee like we're getting over on the president, here's the real significance of that. If you're leaking this badly, this early, you have a problem in your White House. And instead of getting up and lying to people saying, oh, we're running like a well-oiled machine, as Trump did, he ought to be paying attention to why people feel it's necessary to leave. That would be a good manager.
Well, that would mean that he has some personal insight.
Yes, it would mean that.
Well,
you're right.
Okay, so.
Well, you know.
Alan?
Well, you know, I think something's coming up here. Obviously, Trump is really upset about all of this stuff. And so I think he's upset because he knows something is coming. what we've been hearing is that there's a good deal of investigative reporting going on about the Russian thing. And that, as I've said all along, and you all know it, is the one thing that can get this guy impeached right now. Mm-hmm. But that, it seems to me, is why he's really acting out the way he is. And by the way, Joe, would you assemble the staff and have them bring their cell phones to my office and leave them on the table?
Absolutely.
But this is a well-oiled machine.
I have the most boring texts in the world. my texts yesterday were like, did you say one or two heads of lettuce?
Can we just go back to
this for a second?
You know, you've got this group of people in the White House who are supposedly the ultimate Trump people that are in the press, the press office, the loyalists, and they are leaking. I mean, it makes one really wonder whether or not there is any loyalty to this man, or if there's just loyalty to being in the place and mm-hmm. and being around mm-hmm. power.
I don't know. Dean Baquet, the editor of the New York Times, was on CNN yesterday and talking about directly to the charge from Trump that journalists don't have any sources, so they're simply making up this stuff. And Dean Baquet goes, I know who these sources are. And that is journalistic policy for those of you who don't know. If you have a source, their name is not put into print, but your editors get to know and vet who it is you're talking to.
And you need at least two or three to back it up.
You need three usually, right. Yes. Unless it's like Trump leaking something, you know, then you might get away with just one or two. But he said, I know who's talking, right. and they are not made up.
And if it wasn't for unnamed sources, you know.
Go ahead, Alan, you're trying to get in here.
No, I'm sorry, guys. But it is fascinating how this guy, who is the greatest leaker of them all, mm-hmm. you know,
good
is
point.
Now, infuriated about leaking and wants them arrested and wants the FBI to get involved in it and wants all of the rest of this stuff. You know, is there as we heard in the McCarthy hearings, have you no shame?
Absolutely.
What is happening?
Right.
Well, it's a great question and one that you have to wonder. I was struck by something Rosemary said earlier of just this early in the administration, you got to wonder how things are going to go down the road, and especially if you keep on bringing in new people. I mean, we still there are a lot of questions about the chasm between Steve Bannon and Ryan's Priebus.
Even though they were playing buddy-buddy at CPAC.
At the CPAC. And then also, of course, Sean Spicer and the fact that there is a division between Spicer and Kellyanne Conway. And so you do have to wonder if does that play into it, and if there are more people on the way out, new people on the way in, of whether that problem will quickly get resolved.
I think you also need to look at what's not being leaked. We don't have, for example, the budget is supposed to come out this week. We don't have any hint of what's in there. That's kind of interesting. It makes you wonder if there is something to be leaked.
Military spending.
Actually,
said that right.
No, it's military spending up. Yeah. But also leaving the great entitlements alone. We know that that's not in there. So in other words, Social Security, Medicare. And interestingly, there's no real mention of Medicaid, which everybody expected to really get it in the neck.
Right. I think that's right. And on affordable care, there's no – what we're getting are lots of leaks from the congressional side, and it appears to be different than what Bush is talking about. It's very confused. I'm sorry.
Trump.
I keep
– Trump is the new
I said
guy,
Bush
Trump.
Because Bush is on CNN right now talking about how immigration policy must be welcoming and lawful. Pretty amazing that a former Republican president is talking against a new Republican
Trump
president.
Trump makes you
again.
Pine away for George Bush. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
there's going to come.
Go ahead, Alan.
It's going to come that point. Again, I'm sorry. There's going to come that point at which the people who have been relatively silent. Like the Bushes, they made it known they didn't want him during the election. That was for sure. But they've been relatively silent. But when there is a sense, you know, I've often talked about the whoosh factor.
Yes.
There is going to when there is a sense that he is coming close to the end, there will be a whoosh like nothing you've ever mm-hmm. seen before.
Well, and you had said, I was thinking of this morning, you had said that you predicted that that would come when the poll numbers got really low. And we just saw the newest record, which is a record low for any incoming president, which I believe is
39%,
yes. So, it's an NBC poll.
It's fake news.
I don't know. It's he holds a 44% job approval rating, with nearly half of those polled 48% disapproving of the president's job so far. Interestingly, the other thing interesting about this poll was that 51% don't believe that the media is being completely fair with him and is being kind of hard on him.
Oh, but then the Quinnipiac poll, right? That poll last week said, 51% of the people trust the media more than they trust the president. So it really has to do with how the questions were asked.
And yet 91% of the Republicans in one of the recent polls said that they agreed with Trump about the media.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
That's of the Republicans.
Yeah. Right.
91%. That's unbelievable.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll go to some more letters, and then we'll handle some other topics as well. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable. Let's go to a couple of letters. Mary says, do you think that the threat to our nation is significant enough to warrant taking funding away from the EPA in order to build up the military? Are we really forced a choice between security and a viable climate? Or is this just another way that Donald Trump is trying to distract our attention away from the fact that he is dismantling our democracy? Alan.
I love our listeners. I really do. And there is a wonderful, and I do mean wonderful, sort of naivete about asking a question like that. It's a great question. How could you possibly build up the military and destroy the world at the same time? Absolutely a brilliant question. But then you have to know who Donald Trump is.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know that this isn't the guy who thinks in terms of what's the right thing. He thinks in terms of what is the political thing that plays to his base. And so, of course, now, the question I've always had and I've always posed to you guys is, if you put that lie detector cuff on his arm and you said, are you doing this because it's the right thing to do or it's the political thing to do, I suspect you'd find the right thing would win, which is extraordinary to me. The idea that his grandchildren and their children are going to all be faced with this, terrible, terrible situation where the oceans rise and the kids can't find water and all of that. That is what is so depressing to me. So I get the reason that the letter writer is writing. On the other hand, the other side of that is, remember who you're dealing with.
Right. And the people who were chosen, and there was an article in I think it was the Times over the weekend about how Steve Bannon was, the designation was to find people in the cabinet picks who would dismantle the departments that they were put ahead of. Well, right. We sort of saw that. Mm-hmm. We saw that coming, right? that was what we were most worried about during the confirmation hearings, but nothing was really done about it. John writes.
Except there's one thing. There's one problem with that, is that when these people get into these positions, they like the power that they have. And so why would they want to dismantle the only major power, one of the major power things that they get to play with? Rex Tillerson's not going to dismantle the Department of State. EPA, perhaps. But these other folks, they like having this power. That's what it's all about.
But they're also left to explain sort of the unexplainable. They are left to try to make sense of a policy that may or may not exist, that only comes from 140 characters in a tweet, and try to make sense of that, and often contradicting what that statement was simply because they don't have any more information, which seems like eventually will be somewhat troublesome.
Yes.
if not immediately. Mm-hmm. John writes, rank-and-file Dems are angry at the status quo, the same anger that Trump elected, despite all odds and evidence that he could never win. We want change, real change, not pseudo-change or change-lite. Perez might do fine, but the onus is on him. Read the recent New Yorker article about the anger being directed at members of Congress who seek to compromise with Trump. We want total resistance. James says, I was somewhat heartened when on PBS NewsHour Friday night, David Brooks, in response to a comment from Mark Shields that there would be no impeachment, said, maybe not this month. Hope springs eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Dan says, get over it, you say? Funny, that's what many Trump supporters are saying to us. Democrats have to realize something needs to change in their standard mode of operations. Hillary lost because not enough people believe in the Democratic Party direction. Please stop asking us to get over it and rally behind the same old failed message and practice. The Democratic Party's responsibility is to adjust to the will of its constituents. That is from Dan.
Four more years of Trump.
Tony, with all the juicy leaks coming out of the White House, why would anyone waste their time going to a gaggle with Spicer, who only gives misleading and false information?
My point. Exactly.
Cody says, is...
Well, as you know, Rosemary, you and I will never agree on this. And I think it's a sort of a false dichotomy, which is, you know, either they should be listening at the gaggle or they should be out doing other kinds of news. Well, the New York Times and the Washington Post are out doing other kinds of news, and I do think they have to be present. I get your anger at the way this thing is going, but I don't think that most journalists would agree with you. I know that Mike doesn't when he's here, that this is the way to go, that you don't attend press conferences and do your best to ask questions, and by the way, somewhat successfully, to tick him off in a way, Spicer, that he wants to use his mechanical, whatever you see on Saturday Night Live to get you.
I think it's all a waste of time. Go get his tax returns or talk to people who know about his taxes. But I have a really important question.
Yes?
Didn't Viola Davis have a gorgeous dress last night?
Yes.
Have you just been waiting to ask that all show long?
She really is stunning.
All right. That brings us to Michelle, who says she likes our discussion, starting off with the Oscars, and she says it's so nice to be light for a moment, but unfortunately we have to get back to the dark, so let's talk about the SEAL's father who refused to meet Donald Trump. This, of course, was the story about the situation in Yemen and what happened very early on in the administration. Just days into, correct? Am I right on that?
Mm-hmm.
I apologize. I'm just trying to bring up the article.
We're still just days into it, mostly.
But we're 30.
We're in the 40s.
It seems longer, though, doesn't it?
Seems like a lifetime already, okay. But it has been only a month.
Yeah. The question is, the father of the fallen soldier has said that he refused to meet with the vice president with the president, and said that he will. He is trying to really get some answers that the administration has been very. Has not been very cooperative in talking with him and meeting with him. And he was very upset with the quote-unquote show that was put on with both Ivanka and Donald Trump going to the Andrews Air Force Base and meeting the mm-hmm. The body of his son. I don't know. Do things like that last and go into people's... Do they make a difference?
It made me think of that kind of... sadly crazed woman who was, whose son was killed in the messed up Benghazi mm-hmm. defense of the American consul there, and what happened to her. She was used by the Trump people to attack Hillary Clinton, and now that he's won, has he gone back? Is anybody talking to her?
Probably not.
Grief is to exploit parental grief over the death of a child in any way is awful. But Trump has a lot to answer for in that Yemen attack. He's not explained why he went after that. There have been lots of leaks on that because military people think that it was gone into without proper preparation. We've not heard anything except, it was it ran like a fine-tuned machine. and it was great.
So Bill Owens, who's the father of the slain SEAL William Owens, told the Miami Herald that Donald Trump's decision to give the go-ahead and call to give the go-ahead should warrant an investigation. Do you think he will, A, get his investigation, and B, should it be investigated? Alan, I'll give you the last word in our 30 seconds that we have.
No, I mean, the problem really is the Congress. You know, they think they're being very clever, that what they won't do is real investigations. So they do these Republican-type investigations where they say, we'll investigate, but not with a comprehensive committee of Democrats and Republicans. So the answer, the short answer to the question is you may get something, but you won't get a lot. And you probably won't get one in which a president dispatches soldiers anywhere like this. You might, if something got really wrecked, like in Benghazi, where the ambassador was killed, terrible thing happening, and the Republicans were in office, they couldn't wait to do, how many, Rosemary, 12 investigations, something like that on Benghazi. But with these guys in charge of both houses and the presidency, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, we'll pause there. We'll take a break. We'll go to news, and we'll be back. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. A reminder, our email address, or at least the one that we get, is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And we got a couple of letters. I'll start off with this one. And it says here, and I quite agree, it's Alan is absolutely correct. Except, whenever he implies that Trump might someday be removed by impeachment, that would require 15 Republican votes to convict in the Senate, which is not likely to happen. I don't think you've ever said that, Alan. Have you?
Well, look. Here's the deal. This is very, very important. The only time Republicans will start to deal with the opposition or to impeach if he deserves it is when they think it's them or him. And I've said that all along. Right now, impossible. But I'm looking at, let's say, 20% instead of 39%. If his moves keep reflecting badly on him and the people start to turn, particularly in his base, I think there is no question that given a re-election by a potential by a senator or others that they have to defend, that they will bail on Trump. That's my theory. Did I miss something here, Joe, in terms of what the letter said?
No, absolutely. No, dead on. And the other thing, too, and you have to wonder, obviously, of it's a long time, as Rosemary unfortunately pointed out, we're only, 37 days or whatever into that. Right. But anyway, where we'll be in 2 years after the midterm elections.
That's right. Yeah.
Coming up to the midterm elections.
Right.
In other words, it doesn't have to be after the midterm elections where people get defeated. It's that as we approach those elections, if somebody thinks they're riding the wrong horse, they'll change.
Absolutely.
Jim writes this. I don't know how much if you talked about this last week, but the Trump-Pence campaign has been conducting a couple of online polls regarding President Trump and the media. Democrats have found out about it and have been taking the poll.
I got it.
I know I did. With a quick glance at the questions, we'll tell you it's intended for conservative Republicans. I took it and haven't had this much fun since Trump was sworn in.
Yeah, that's true.
This one from Carol, who said, I keep trying to tell people Trump and his billionaire buddies don't care for the environment because they figure they have enough money to access clean water or purify their own air when the rest of the world is suffering from the effects of their greed and selfishness. All right, let's go to some other topics and find out what else is going on here. I do want to bring up the story about I don't know how significant this is. It seems to me, just because we started talking about a large number of people, but U.S. President, Donald Trump's pick for Secretary of the Navy withdrew from consideration on Sunday. That's the second time a Trump nominee to lead one of the armed services bowed out because of a government conflict of interest rules. Trump last month nominated Philip Bilden, a private equity executive and former military intelligence officer to lead the Navy, which the president had pledged he will expand. In a statement on Sunday, Bolton said that after an extensive review process, I have determined that I will not be able to satisfy the Office of Government Ethics requirements without undue disruption and materially adverse divestment of my family's private financial interests. Which my question for you, Alan, is why didn't they know that before they named the guy?
I can't figure that out. I can't figure it out. Not only that, I mean, these people, there has to be a real sense of naivete, whatever word you want to use here, that they can get away with. They could get away with anything from the beginning.
But why
it
aren't
turns
the,
out they can't.
But why weren't the other nominees put through the same rigor? It's like, oh, it's the Navy, it's the Army, it's only these two. You got Rex Tillerson, you've got all these other folks with that are conflicted out, and they haven't had any problems.
No, no. What's going on is you have to divest, unless you're the president, then you can be
blind trusted.
Yeah, well, he's not anything. He hasn't divested. He's got this fake thing. And so if you're a candidate who has to go through the same process, you're thinking, well, I'm not as bad. I don't have as much stuff as DeVos or Trump, so I can do this. And then you get into the dealing with the ethics office, which is actually asking for a real divestiture, and they're realizing it's going to cost them a ton of money to work for the government. They don't want to do it.
So did Tillerson divest?
He sold off a ton of stock. He's an extremely wealthy man. Yeah,
yes.
He truly did divest. There's some question about DeVos, who has, this. You probably read about this one company that deals with schools.
Right.
And it's not exactly, it's a little shady. And she held on to that, made an argument. I mean, it's not like you can't get away with a lot. This is a problem that comes from putting nominating for office people who have rich and complex business lives.
And no experience, really.
Well, that doesn't
and
bother
by the
him
way,
at all. Yeah. He doesn't have it. Go ahead, Alan. Please.
And by the way, I'm so sorry. It wouldn't be the first time that when they nominate somebody, they didn't get the truth, you know, from them.
Right.
And then also it might be that the nominee in this case takes a look and says, I've been hiding something that I'm not going to get away with. We really don't know what that one issue is that kept them up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, Mnuchin came close to that, if you remember, the Treasury Secretary. Forgot to put down $100 million. Oh, that small thing, I forgot.
Yeah,
but
you got to carry the one.
But then he still is confirmed. That's the issue.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's right.
But isn't that what you were saying earlier, Alan, even in this case of the Navy, that had it gone through and he hadn't pulled out, that the guy may have very well been confirmed?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's right. No, that was Rosemary's point, and I think it's exactly right. Look, you've got a Congress, a Senate is going along with these guys. And they're scared. They're scared to death. They're scared of him. They know that he's capable of turning on a dime against them. And so far, the most painless thing for them, gutless as they are, is to turn their backs on decency and go with Trump.
All right, so let's go from national politics to state politics and talk about the Siena College poll that was released last hour, which says for the first time since January 2015, 60% of New Yorkers have a favorable view of Governor Andrew Cuomo, and his job performance rating is now positive for the first time since July 2014, according to the new Siena poll of New York State registered voters released today. Cuomo's favorability rating is 60-34%, up from 56-37% last month. His job performance rating is 50-48%, up from a negative 45-53% last month. For the first time, half of the voters now say they are prepared to reelect him. Support remains strong for several of the governor's budget proposals. So in the world of polling, Alan, what does this mean? Followed up by the second question, what did he do right?
Well, first of all, the miscreants are out of his administration. His so-called third brother, Joe Prococo, Todd Howe, dare I say, Calieros, they're gone. And what he's got now is a bunch of professionals who are saying, taking a look at the polling data and everything else and saying, okay, you lost your left flank, get him back. So he does college education for everybody. Now, there are some nuances in that plan that people take exception to. Nevertheless, he has been going in the right direction for an awful lot of people in blue state New York, and it's been working for him. I don't think it's magic. In terms of re-election, I have to tell you, they have nobody. There's nobody on the Republican side, and there's nobody on the Democratic side who's going to challenge the guy. Or as, I'm sorry to say this, in terms of national security, but he's in like Flynn.
The other, getting to Alan's point about the blue New York is his rhetoric around immigration, around the trans bill, the trans regulation that was overturned on the federal level, against hate and saying we're not going to put up with it. He's putting some money where his mouth is. There are a lot of people who are responding very positively to that because we have this man in the White House who is saying the most god awful things about all of us. And here's a governor who is standing up and saying the right thing. And I think that plays into this as well.
How's he doing with teachers these days? Do you know that, Alan? He had such trouble with teachers, but now the Voss administration, and he even looks good on that.
Yeah, yeah.
The private schools aren't happy with him right now.
Actually, the teachers were so angry at him that I know I can't find a teacher who says they'll vote for him because of what he pulled when he first came into office. I just can't find one. The union has made their peace with him because he backed off. Therefore, you got a situation where the rank and file, and it's dangerous for union leaders, where the rank and file are different from the individuals there. But, you know, the big trial is coming up for Coco and Howe, who has pled guilty already. And I can assure you the Cuomo name is going to get bandied around, and he himself is saying he may be called to testify. And nobody likes to testify in court when perjury is very, very dangerous. Guys go to jail for perjury a lot who haven't really done anything else wrong or that they can prove. So I think the Albany hands that I talk to, and there are a lot of them, are all saying wait till the trial, because right now that could turn things around.
Well, I find that interesting because when you see a poll, I mean, look, I think any politician would kill for a 60% approval rating, right? I mean, that's a good approval rating. So,
sure.
I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here, but if and look, we're living in an area where in the primary last times ever teach out won handily the regions in Albany and Rochester and Buffalo. But I am curious because you don't get that great favorability, and the mood of the room in Albany seems to still be very much, even among Democrats, very anti the governor. And I am curious as does this reflect on what Libby was saying and Alan alluded to as well of compared to Trump and what's been going on there, this looks better.
Pretty good. And any Republican who's going to run is going to echo Trump in this state, because it was clear the Republican. The polling showed that the Republicans love him. I mean, this poll from Siena, his marks for the Republicans were really high.
Where's Carl Paladino when you need him?
Well, he's got a baseball bat up in Buffalo.
Alan, what were you going to say?
It's going to be Astorino from Westchester County. And I don't think he's going to do much better this time than he did the last time, especially because of what Libby just said about the Republicans and Trump. So, you know, I think this creates that kind of a advantage, believe it or not, for Cuomo, because if he's against Trump, blue state New York is for him. But anything can happen here. I always thought that if a Bloomberg type Republican with a lot of money came along, it would be real bad for Cuomo, who has raised $27 million already, something like that.
Plenty of money. He doesn't have to worry about that.
And then there's a big, There's a big article in the Times that says, or in one of the things I read this morning, that he's really setting himself up to run for president. Well, we all know that. And yet there's not an appetite for him in other places. We've heard that before, too. So you can't count anybody out.
There's no appetite for anybody for president, is there, at this point? Aren't we just already still sick of 2016?
Oh, but people are lining up. You got to start running. Oof. After the January 2019, after the midterms, it'll all start again.
Okay, that's still a couple of years away.
Yeah,
though.
Well, not really.
Let's finish off.
Time flies.
Yeah, yes. Let's finish off with Obamacare. A divided White House still offers little guidance on replacing Obamacare. A meeting Friday afternoon between President Trump and Ohio Governor John Kasich, his former rival in the GOP primaries, had no set agenda, but Kasich came armed with one anyway. His hope to blunt drastic changes to the nation's health care system envisioned by some conservatives in Washington. Over the next 45 minutes, according to Kasich and others briefed on the session, the governor made his pitch while the president eagerly called in several top aides and then got Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price on the phone. At one point, senior advisor Jared Kushner reminded his father-in-law that House Republicans are sketching out a different approach to providing access to coverage, to which you can just hear, "Dad." Well, I like this better, Trump replied, according to a Kasich advisor.
Yeah, well, Kasich is setting himself up, obviously. Mm-hmm. You have to look, you have to play this game. What if? What if Trump is forced out? Who's up next? Will it be another one like him, or will it be somebody who has a little bit more of a moderate, traditional Republican following? And as soon as I read that, Joe, and I had the sense that this was a brilliant move on Kasich's part, and he knows that they're failing to come up with an alternative to Obamacare. They just can't do it.
And this also comes, and I mean, we've all seen the articles, as the program is very popular and the aspects that they start playing with are now getting, talk about approval ratings, are getting approval ratings in the high 50s and low 60s of people approving. So I don't know if, I assume that definitely plays into the sort of impasse that has come mm-hmm. over this issue.
You know, the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, may well become like Social Security and Medicare, the third rail. I mean, people want health insurance. I read this morning somebody in one of the articles we were reading about this notion that people don't need to have full coverage. Well, mm-hmm. that's really very generous of you, I would
Where
say.
Where were these people
right.
6 months ago?
That's right.
All those people coming to town hall meetings who are now suddenly aware that they may not have health insurance or full health insurance. Where were they 6 months ago? Why were we so bad in rousing them up for a vote that might have prevented all of this?
Well, this is true, Rosemary, but the thing is that it's water under the bridge, and now we have to look forward.
We have to move forward.
Okay.
Jessica Biel had a beautiful gown
last
night.
Yes, she did. But the bottom line is that there is this notion coming from the Republicans and the conservatives that people don't deserve the full spectrum of health care. And that is just insane because we're going to end up paying for it because people are going to go to the emergency room for the flu.
Final 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Sure. The alternatives are so ridiculous. You know, health care savings accounts for
right.
poor people.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That'll do it all right.
Right.
That'll
for people who
around.
Make 30 yep. cents an hour.
Yeah.
And the big winners, of course, Viola Davis and Jessica Biel, right?
Definitely. For fashion, absolutely.
All
yes.
right. We'll end there this morning. My thanks to everyone. And thank you for writing in. Thank you for being part of the discussion. Alan, Rosemary, and Libby, thank you. The roundtable will continue after this short break.